So that would be then they didn't know this aspect of the culture and they were wanting to do for. You understand? Throw one in for Sudarshan.
Or they're each getting one.
Okay, but you can count them as they each get one. So they would be thinking like that, that therefore it wasn't wrong, but at the same time as they're considered one deity. Jagannath Baladev Subhadra are counted as one deity. Like that. Gorni Thai, then you can discuss, you know, like that. Then it's just a matter of who's there.
About this, the three sweets, is there a consideration that the spiritual master shouldn't get boga at the same time as the deities?
There's going to be a problem if they want to eat together. Lord Chaitanya never ate with his associates. You know what I'm saying?
I was thinking that maybe you know it should be offered to the deities first before the spiritual master.
Point is they're all associates of each other, so whatever they want to do, it's up to them. Yeah, they'll work it out. You know? You know, it's like if, you know, some temples, like you have so many altars, I mean so many deities that they only put one plate. You know, because they'll work it out. They know.
Once the curtain's closed.
Yeah. Get in there, then the negotiations. But the problem is Jagannath and Shaligrams, it'll work out nicely. But if it's Jagannath and Giriraj, then there's a problem. Because Jagannath is into rules and it's formal. Giriraj doesn't care. So as soon as the plate hits the altar, before it's even been offered, he's eaten the sweets. Right? And Jagannath is sitting and waiting for you to offer it, and then he'll eat, and then eat his sweets. So, therefore, then Giriraj always has to have his own arrangement. Like that. But Shaligram, he does okay. He does, yes.
In Kalyana Maharaj, I saw in Temple Moja and Toronto, they have, each deity has school. And spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and Prabhupada, they have own plate and three spoons on it. And each have a piece, for example, puri or whatever we offer, sweets. And Radha and Krishna, they have two spoons. They have three spoons. And
see, things are okay. It means like lamps, when you offer the pradeeps, it's always in odd numbers. So I'm saying in food, you never offer three, even though it's the perfect Western number. Right? Two is not quite enough, four is too much, so three is perfect. But three is for enemies. That's just the way it is.
Oh, and one?
One's not enough.
But about incense, we offer three spoons.
That's what I'm saying. It's not food. You know, it's not food.
What about the donation when you give? Should be odd or even?
It ends in one, but ideally there's other numbers in front of it. But I can see it's not very popular here. This is the only donation box I've ever seen. It's just full of ones. Like that. You know, it should be, you know, 21, 51, 101, you know, 1001, you know. Like that. Ask the president. He'll agree. Yes.
Coming back on Puri.
As in Jagannath. Yeah.
So the explanation what was explained yesterday was that Gaudiya and Guru cannot sit together and eat. And
why can't they sit together and eat?
Yeah.
It's Guru Garanga altar.
Right.
If it was Gorni Thai altar and then you have a picture of the spiritual master, then it's just Gorni Thai. But when you have Guru Garanga, then you have the four of them. You know what I'm saying? Why the spiritual master couldn't sit, Lord Chaitanya, sat with the devotees, you know, and at Haridas Thakur's disappearance feast, and all the devotees were there eating. So only some of them who were the most qualified served. Lord Chaitanya, in fact, all his devotees were sitting and he was serving. Right? Because when you're doing a feast on behalf of Haridas Thakur, it means Hari Das Thakur is the host. Therefore, then you have devotees that serve on his behalf, so Lord Chaitanya wanted to do that. But when he started serving five times the amount that one person could eat to each person, then Sri Damodar and that told him, you sit down, we'll take care. You know, because Lord Chaitanya would eat enough for five people. That's also a consideration, how many puris you put. But, you know, okay. Does that make sense? So, I haven't heard that if it's a Guru Granth, that it would be a problem.
He also explained that it's a different tattva,
Guru Tattva, but it's all part of the same thing. Right? Sub Damodar is Lalita. We're all under Lalita. Right? She's the boss. We're all under her protection. Right? So then, what's the problem? You know what I'm saying? It's means if you're looking at it the formal, you're looking at it from your perspective, that I'm going through the spiritual master through him, I'm assisting him in the worship. You know what I'm saying? So that's proper. So that kind of vision is fine. But then the same time is there is also them and their pastimes, and so if they want to, you know what I'm saying? Who's to say that they wouldn't? You know what I'm saying? So I wouldn't take that as a position. You know, I would say is that why they're only saying three with Prabhupada when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is there, because Prabhupada wouldn't eat one and the spiritual master not eat one. You know what I'm saying? So therefore you'd have four. I would also more work on the thing is you wouldn't put three on the plate anyway. You'd put four or put two. You know what I'm saying? So all these different arguments are correct in their own perspective. But at the same time, as then there's other aspects. And so you'd want to find the balance there. Does that make sense? Okay. And then you also have is then it makes it more fun. Because even if the spiritual master isn't eating, then there's one more that Gorni Thai can fight over. So then, so okay. Anything else? Anything else? Nothing else? Yes?
I just wanted to ask if it is how important to have a manual for the deities that you want, but now the standard.
It's good.
Too much like the rules and regulations.
But what is there some problem with rules and regulations?
No.
The man goes to work. He's going to be late. So it doesn't really matter that he doesn't call you, you know, and tell you he's going to be late because that's a rule, right? Understand? Rules are there for the relationship. In other words, Krishna gets this standard of food, you know, and so then one day he doesn't, you know. Just like every day you go and after Mangalarti you get a sweet. And that's been going on for years. And then one day you don't get. And then you say, what happened? They say, oh, it's just too many rules. You know what I'm saying? So the rules are there to ensure that the standard of worship, or you know, in here specifically, the standard of our expression of our, of affection for Krishna is standard. It doesn't go up and down according to the moon and, you know, bad hair days or, you know, whatever it is that makes us, you know, change our moods. That it's standard, it's steady, you know, like that. So manual is fine. There's not, rules and regulations aren't the problem. It's not understanding them, that's the problem. Because if you understand them, they're fine. Like devotees, you say samskars. Why do we have to do samskars? What's the big deal? Like that. But if you think about it, okay, parents like their kid. They want to see them healthy. Okay, so the different ones is you know, one of them parting the hair, then that's to do with the consciousness of the child. Like that, you know, and the health of the mother. So you don't want your wife to be healthy once she's pregnant, right? So then there's a samskar just before the birth of the child so that the birth will actually go unimpeded without much problem. So of course you want your wife to yell and scream and writhe in pain as much as possible because, you know, all those days that, you know, she's, you know, giving you trouble, and since she's got pregnant you can't even touch her, so you really want her to suffer, right? So you wouldn't want to do the samskar. When the birth of the child then that is called, it's called Jati Karma, but it's also called Medha Yajna, because it actually gives them intelligence. By performing that, the kid gets intelligence, brains, you know, like that. You know, they can actually remember things, understand, see their intelligence work. So no parent wants their kid to be too smart, because then they ask too many questions and then they have to be bothered answering all the questions. So you wouldn't want to do it, right? Namakarana then is to do with the planets. So because the planets actually control everything, then if you your obligatory pleasing of the planets to do with this, then makes everything go smoothly for the child. But you wouldn't want that, because, you know, then later on you wouldn't be able to sit around and go to 20 million, you know, astrologers and have them give you ideas what's there, and then you could lament and all that. But if everything went smoothly for you, you wouldn't even be interested. Paushti karma is then for the nourishment and health of the child and all that, and that you definitely wouldn't want. Anaprasana is for good digestion. If the digestion is good, then health is good. Your whole health is based on your digestion. The better the digestion, the better your health. But, you know, you wouldn't want that for your kid, because then if he's sickly, then you can take care of him more. If he's healthy, then he's running around, going out of the house, out with friends. So the mom has nothing to do. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the whole idea. People know what it is, they'd be interested. But they don't know what it is, and therefore, they, oh, it's ritual, write it off. Or we don't get into rituals, even though we didn't even know what samskars were, right? You know, it's like, if you go out here, gutter out there, it's not that they know a whole lot about all this stuff like that. You know, and then when Prabhupada comes and picks you up out of the gutter and then tells you about these things, and then we say, oh, this is ritualistic. You know what I'm saying? No, what it means is, for my culture of living in the gutter, which I like, it doesn't fit in, because, you know, I'm so much in ignorance, I wouldn't want to actually get involved in these things, because they would take endeavor, they would take, you know, it means I'm satisfied doing nothing, right? The couch is nicely warmed, like that. I have my picture on the wall as the head couch potato in the house. And, you know, I'm happy that way. My wife doesn't like it. She's talking about divorce, but hey, that's her problem. She's being trippy. You know? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is rules and regulations aren't the problem. It's lack of understanding them is the problem. So we don't understand and we throw them out. We don't understand and we overemphasize them. So we notice here in these, when we come up, we hit one of these nice little nerves of a ritual. Right? Notice that you can very clearly see two parties. One is the ritual must be performed, that's the way it is. They couldn't explain at all why. You know? And the other one is, no, it's not practical, and this and that, and they can't explain either. So one is, it's too much trouble, the other one, it must be done. But the point is, why must it be done? You know? Or why is it too much trouble? What do you mean it's too much trouble? Then if it's too much trouble, then what was the meaning of a relationship? You know, kids are too much trouble. If you know, you want trouble, have a kid. Like that. But people take the trouble. Why? Because they want the relationship. So trouble's not an obstacle to a relationship. So if you're not willing to take the trouble, means you're not committed to the relationship. So if you're not willing to take any trouble for the deity, means you're not really committed to the deity. At the same time, if you're only into ritual, you're also not necessarily committed to the deity. You're just a religious person, a ritualistic person. So you like that. You're comfortable in that, you know. Like an intellectual likes to go to school, you know. Does that make sense? So these two parties have to work out their differences and come to a Krishna conscious balance, that it's actually being done for the deity. And so then what's the actual proper standard to do that, right? Taking into consideration all these things. Does that make sense? So, like that, then that's there. So there's something special. Does that make sense? So for example, here is, okay, three is there, that's contested. But the point is, you know, if it's a matter of it's, you know, okay, not counting the spiritual master, why is the altar guru Gauranga? You know, then you're counting the spiritual master. But at the same time, as three still wouldn't be used because it's a wrong number to use. So then if you want to count the spiritual master, then you'd increase it to four. But if they want to make it very clear that the spirit, we're going through the spiritual master, that's our perspective. Our perspective is, we are assisting the spiritual master worshiping Gorni Thai. Therefore, while he's worshiping, he would not be eating, because he's doing the worship. In other words, he's doing the boga offering. Therefore, and we're assisting. Therefore, he wouldn't be eating. So therefore, you'd have two. You know, does that make sense? At the same time, we can be assisting our spiritual master who's doing the worship. At the same time, it is the altar, and they are all associates. So you can have both happening at once also. So then you can consider, well, hey, four. Or if you don't know, you can do four, and then Gorni Thai get two each, and if they want to share it, then hey, hari ho. That's their... Is that okay? Okay. Anything else? 3 minutes. You had something.
Well, it's kind of like a technical thing. I heard that if you accidentally broke the privacy, that first I was told to follow the next day, but then I was told you weren't supposed to follow the Okadasi on the Dvadasi.
You can do that on the but point is it's one or the other. It's like, it means you've done and partly followed it, so then Dvadasi would go normal, so then on Triodasi then you'd follow it. That is direction has also been given, but it's also been where they broke it on the one day, they followed the next. I've heard both being explained. So whichever works for you, like that. Okay.
I have a little general question. I'm trying to understand this. I don't do altars, Pujari, but knowing that the stump is going through a little difficulties in their opinions and their direction, how does that affect the our consciousness for the community, overall, everyone out there also? If we cannot balance and be harmonized, how can we help those out there to be also, in that mood?
I would say is that means that you have the thing, but why has this come up? You know what I'm saying? Because it's just been going on and no one's been worrying about it. Why has it come up now that they're worrying about a standard? One, it might be that they're just aware that there should be proper worship and it should be, set and all that. But there's also the element, it could be it comes to light because there's not enough pujaris. And why aren't there enough pujaris? There's enough devotees, but everybody's busy in their own life. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, it makes it harder, so they have to figure out what's going to work for, all the people that make it work. Does that make sense? Because it's just like, if you really look at it, how many people from Boston are doing the deity worship? Generally, if you look at it, they're all imported. Why? There's enough people here from Boston that could do it, but they're not doing it. Therefore, you have to go find some people from somewhere else. Right? And so then it's like that. The worship is going on by the pujaris, so then it's going on nicely. These are more managerial, administrative things, so that's another thing. So that they just have to discuss and work it out. So it's not going to affect the deity worship. It's a separate thing, because it's like anything administration, some things are very clear and very direct, so you do them immediately, and some things are not, so then you work it out and it takes longer and then you finally get it right. So Manu mentions that in administration, that anything that's direct and obvious, you do it immediately. And those things that are not, then don't do them until you've worked it out very nicely. So in other words, this will be one of the things we'll have to discuss longer and make it work. So it's in that category. So it doesn't affect the daily deity worship. Because the pujaris go on and do what they do. So it's the main thing is that their devotion, their commitment. Does that make sense?
Does that affect our consciousness and our elevation of our...
No, it wouldn't, because it's a matter of administration. So those who are in the administration, that's their service. Then we have our service, like that. So it's a separate thing, just like the person who's taking out the garbage. Then that's his service and affects there. And if he's he's in Maya when he takes out the garbage, it doesn't affect you. You know what I'm saying? Because that's their service. Now, if the worship of the deity then is affected, then that may have effect on you. But this is administration. This is not the day, the actual worship itself. You know what I'm saying? So whether they're offering two puris or three puris, the point is whatever it is offered with devotion, then everybody benefits. But how many it is, that's an administrative thing, so then they'll work it out. And once they worked it out, then it's done. Is that okay? Okay. Yeah?
I had heard that the Prabhupada liked it for devotees living near a temple to focus like on these, so that devotees could like come together and like have association and worship together. And it like it must have been like further away to have more focus on the temple meetings, rather than taking focus away
concerning
temple deities and having...
One's own deities. Yeah, that would be the standard. In other words, the temple deity is the deity. Even, it means like, it, technically speaking, if you're here in this area, you know, in other words, in this yatra, even you have deities, they're technically, according to Pancharatra, expansions of the temple deities. Right? You know, unless you're from another, originally another temple, and then you consider your deal's expansion of those deities. But in any case, they don't stand on their own. They're always an expansion of the main deity. In any case. So if that's the case, then if you could be worshipping the main deity, why you would be worshipping your own? But if you don't have the facility to worship the main deity, then that's when you'd have your own. That would be technically how it would work. I'm saying that would be the you know. So then that has to be judged like that. So in other words, if you have opportunity, you could worship your deities at another time or something. You know, in other words, it shouldn't conflict. Like let's say the Goswamis in Vrindavan, Janmashtami was at Govindaji. You know, so that means at midnight when they'd have the Abhishek, that was Govindaji. So all the other Goswamis would worship their deities earlier than that, so that everybody could be there for Govinda's Abhishek. Does that make sense? You know, so that would be the way it works. So if it's you're inclined, you're close, you could do, but it's like, well, you're doing your puja, then do your puja at a different time. You know, like in, does that make sense? Like that. So it's just, you know, come do this puja, then go home and do that puja, or do that first, then come here, or something. Or does that make sense? So it's that would be the consideration is always the main deity, like that. Then after that, then you get other deities. Okay.
Describe these two sort of camps of the ritualistic and the so-called practical. What's your advice for not finding some middle ground, but bringing these two closer
together?
The
point is both of them are making very good points, but they're also missing some points, because basically you're dealing with different perspectives of the same thing. If something is not according to a bona fide perspective, that's to be dropped. Right? But if it is something that would be within the perspective, then it's a matter of what's the advantage of each one. And then see, you know, means in other words, if you've always been taking one, then that's fine, it works. You know, and so unless there's an advantage to the other one, then why would you switch? In other words, it's not just adjusting a rule, it would be, you know, affecting, you know, the process. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Like Krishna is God. He is God. But the Brajbasis don't really care about that. You know what I'm saying? So they worship him because... The point is God must be worshipped. So some worship him because he is God. The Brajbasis worship him just because he's the nicest person. They just like him. You know, he's God, not God. That's his own business. You know, he can be God in his own time, right? You know, but it's... They like him. So God is worshipped, but he's not worshipped because he's God. He's worshipped just because they think he's nice. You know what I'm saying? So both perspectives are bona fide. Because the principle, actually, the underlying principle is God is worshipped. So that's the thing, is you have to find what's the common point between them. That's where it's going to, that's what makes it work. You know? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think I'm thinking, and this could be sort of a, you know, contemporary sort of Western mindset, that the extremes are wrong and that we should come to some...
Yes, but what is the middle?
Yeah,
the middle is not a different thing. The extremes are portions of the middle that have been taken to extreme. That's all. There is only the middle path. That is the path. These other two don't work as paths because they're not working. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is like this. You have to have standards. It has to be applied to time, place, and circumstance. Okay? So these are the strengths of each. This is also the weakness of each. Right? One has the rules, so that's their strength because they have authority. But their weakness is time, place, and circumstance because it's just the rule. They don't actually try to understand how to apply it. The other has time, place, and circumstance, so that's very good. They deal with the moment, they deal with, you know, what's practical, they deal with, you know, the people and all that, but they don't have any standards. So the point is with standards you apply to time, place, and circumstance. That's the actual middle path. So it's not that you're creating the middle path, you're becoming aware of it. Like that. In other words, if something works, it only works because it's part of the middle path. But the point is you remove one thing from it and try to make a complete path out of it, it doesn't work. The path is made up of seemingly contradictory elements. But that's the point, is they're blended. You know, in other words, you know, it's all about the individual. No, it's all about the institution. But the point is no, the institution is made up of individuals, so you have to apply the institution to an individual. And an individual should be in line with the institution. Then it works. Otherwise, it won't work. It can't work. So this always this, you know, how you say, you know, what are you, polarizing, because that's the mundane thing: duality, hot, cold, happiness, distress. So we also have to, you know, what do you call it? Polarify, you know, all these different things. That's why it's always a problem. You know, you get totally into a rule that may not even be so important. You know, it's just like here, you know, is it, you know, it's two, no, it's three, no, it's two, it's no, it's three. Why do we have to only do it? Why can't we offer more? You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is that somebody eats more, why we wouldn't want more? Why it's over two or three, you know? You know what I'm saying? When is it that you say everybody only gets one pakora? Yeah, when there's a shortage. So if there's a shortage mentality, then you have problems. You know. So isn't that one of the big themes of self-help books? Shortage mentality, right? Poor dad, rich dad. This, that, you know, is that I think less, oh, I can't do it, oh, this, that, oh, it's impossible. So they're always trying to, no, think big, you are the goal, you are the this, you are the, you know, it's all that kind of stuff, you know, like that. All they're trying to do is get you to, you know, broaden your perspective. So does that make sense? So the point is okay, this week there is only enough pakuras for one. That was a mistake. Next week there better be more. But if it's like, oh, that worked, no one complained, you know, like that. There was no riot, so therefore you only cook one. No, cook more. Does that make sense? Like that. In other words, what we're giving you here is how to understand it, how to approach it, so you can make something from it, because each temple is unique. How it's going to apply its deity worship in detail is going to be different. Does that make sense? So therefore you have to understand the principles on which you're functioning. That's why it says, you know, that we're not giving you a specific answer, because the answer is specific to this situation. Does that make sense? So with understanding, with training, then you can establish so many things. If there's no understanding, no training, then that's another thing. But then deity worship's not to be based on ignorance, right? It's a transcendental subject. Like that. We take it as ritual, but it's actually Pancharatra is counted as transcendental, as in with the philosophy. Like that. So you're dealing with transcendental things then. The yajnas, samskaras, that's dealing down on the connecting the mundane. But the Pancharatra is transcendental, but it's designed so that those on the mundane platform can connect to it. Like that. So it's in the same category like the Bhagavat, just it's junior to the Bhagavat. You know, just like you have the Hare Krishna mantra, that's the primary mantra, it's independent. Then expanding from that, the first mantra to expand is the Kama Gayatri. But then you're dealing with Gayatri means Pancharatra. So then they have some more rules and different things. They have to have the seed syllable, they have to have this, they have to have that. Hare Krishna doesn't have to have any of that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's a transcendental principle. Right? So it's not exactly ritual. Right? It means you want to see ritual, then that's what Prabhupada's given us. That's not ritual. That's just the essence. So for anyone to throw that out means they have absolutely no idea what they're doing. Ritual is, you know, 20 pages on what you have to do when your father dies. You know, like that. And you do one thing wrong, you're in big trouble. That's ritual. Ritual in yajna means it takes you 9 months to build the yajna kund. It's got 10,000 bricks. The main priest, he does all the square bricks. His wife does all the triangular bricks, and they make them by hand. Right? That's ritual. That's 9 months to make the kunda. Then we're talking about doing the yajna, and it takes 90 Brahmins to do that yajna from 4 different Vedas. And if in all that, one of those 90 Brahmins, in however long that yajna takes, it might take you a year, says one syllable wrong, your whole yajna doesn't work. That's ritual. So coming in, you know, making sure that you washed your feet after you went to the toilet, and then doing an achman, and then offering the artik lamp, you know, with a certain amount of circles, that's not ritual. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's like going over here, and in the park there's this little hill, and you're going, wow, you know, big mountain, why do we have to do that? No, Everest, that's a mountain. That's a little blip, you know, on the landscape in the park. So the point is the acharyas have already gone through and simplified it. So what they give us is the essence. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Yes. Stopped chanting rounds means there's some devotee outside the temple not chanting, so you don't know how you can worship the deities.
Devotees who live in temple and don't chant rounds and worship deities. How Krishna see this service? Is this something?
That's the point. Is why aren't they chanting? Get them chanting. Yeah, well, that's the thing to figure out. It's because otherwise this other approach is it's going to stay like that they're not chanting, because what can we do about it anyway? So how does Krishna look at it and how to deal? No, why are they not chanting? Get them chanting.
But as you said last few days, you said we you want or don't want to do it something?
Yes, so that's the thing, is then you have to approach them. You know what I'm saying? The question is them.
Well, I ask, the devotee said, I'm not inspired in this temple.
So then you work it out with the authorities, and if they want this kind of uninspired person living in the temple. Because the point is, if your temple is full of uninspired people, that means you're going to have a community that's uninspired to get involved with it. Right? Chopati has probably around 2,500 very active community members. They only have 60 or 70, maybe it's 80 now, brahmacharis in the temple. They respect those brahmacharis the same way they would the sannyasis. Right? So because they respect the people in the temple, therefore they're always involved, they do all the management of the temple, they give all the money, they just build the temple. Right? But the brahmacharis do the puja and take care of themselves and do the preaching. That's all they do. They don't do administration, they don't do nothing else. You know, I mean, they clean their areas, this and that. But everything else is done by the community. Even the cooking for the deities is done by the community. Like that. And the community, you know, some that are there, qualified, they take part in the deity worship. Like that. So that's the point, is when you make your temple, you know, so it's inspired, then your community will be inspired and will take part. You have enough people here and enough pujaris. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of that. And then why they're not inspired. There must be a reason. I'm not inspired in this temple, so what does that mean? Why not in this temple? But I'm saying they have to have a reason. You can't just say it and then just say, I'm not, why aren't you inspired? You know, like that. They don't get enough halava, or what is it? You have to find out. Yeah, not enough puris. That's it. You found the whole problem right here. There's not enough puris. You know, is she on the council? She can come in with a plaque, you know, it says, more puri. you understand? So why they're not inspired, figure that out. So why is it this temple? It means that in another temple they were inspired, but the point is it's devotional service. So chanting Hare Krishna, that's something that's just your part of the mission. You want to be in this temple and do service or not? That's another point of inspiration. But chanting, that's just standard. You know, it's not based on the second verse. You know, there's no rules and regulations that control the chanting. Because chanting is something you always do.
No hard and fast.
Nam nama, because I was getting into nadanam najanam. Nam nama karibhaja. So it's like, does that make sense? So therefore there must be a reason why they say they're not inspired. It can't just be, that's it. Because, you know, they're not kids. Kids can say that, and then you can go through the guessing game and try to figure it out. Or if it's women, then you can do that. But if it's men, you know, then they have to have an explanation. Is that okay? Yes.
Well, sometimes devotees have like taken shelter in the temple, and then it gets like a difficult situation because like the temple is like their only shelter, and you know, at some point that, you know, maybe they're not following standards or feeling inspired to really participate actively in Prabhupada's mission, but yet the temple's their shelter.
But the point is what does that mean, shelter? You know what I'm saying? Shelter means, okay, the crash pad.
Right.
You know, the bed and breakfast. You know. You know, so that's not. Shelter is, it's like this. You have someone in the temple who they do lots of service, do everything like that, but they're just too simple and just getting all the, you know, rounds done, this, that, and all the different things, that's too much for them. But they're nice people, very humble, understand they're on the bottom of the rung of the ladder, and they're just doing whatever they can to, you know, help those who are more dynamic. That's okay.
Yeah.
But if it's that they do nothing and expect to get all facilities, that's not very good. It's two different things.
Yeah.
Yeah, so one has to distinguish between that. Because shelter means shelter. Because if it is shelter, then you're inspired. Mm-hmm. Right? If the wife feels sheltered by the husband, what does it result in? She does nothing. She's active. She does service. So if they actually see it as their shelter, then they will respond by doing service. If they don't do service, they don't see it as a shelter. It's just easy.
I mean, I'm like kind of questioning if the ashram system even works in America, because it seems like some place that attracts people who don't want to be dysfunctional.
So therefore, dysfunctional people should stay in their partially functioning position outside the temple. Because when they come into the temple, then it becomes total dysfunctional. So outside is partial dysfunctional. And then if you want to help them out, find, you know, a few of these, you know, basically dysfunctional people and put them all together so that they all share one apartment. That way in their dysfunctionalness, they only have to pay less rent. You know what I'm saying? So it'll help them, you know, and then they can, you know, enjoy the bhav of each other's dysfunctionality. You know, it'll set the mood and they'll be inspired, you know, in their dysfunctionality, of course. You know what I'm saying? But why they should move into the temple? Temple is not, it's not that kind of a welfare. You know what I'm saying? You know, if they want to come to the temple every day and take prasad because they can't get it together, that's another thing. You know, and they'll do a little something for that and then go away. And that's fine. But why they should be in the temple, because otherwise then it's a problem. You know. But community can, okay, if they've been around, the community wants them, you know, to have, and the community can look for something for them, move them there, find a place close by, you know, figure out something, how they can all get it together, you know, and then stick them all there. You know what I'm saying? But like I said, you can distinguish between one who appreciates that shelter and therefore is working and doing service and trying to do whatever they can, and those who aren't. You know, and if it's a matter of they're in a position where they can't do service due to, you know, disease or whatever it is like that, then that is something the community should take care of. Like we were reading in the Bhagavatam, the invalid, the old, they're taken care of. Because the point is everyone has to remember, everyone's going to get old. So if you don't have a system in place, then you're going to have a lot of people who have problems. You know, so they can set something up, they can get an apartment, you know, people pitch in for it, but then, you know, there's got to be some basic standard, otherwise, you know, why would they would be there? You know, they're there, you know, they would somehow or another be favorable, wouldn't kill each other. You know, like, you know what I'm saying? It's just something that the community has to work out. It's a community problem. Mm-hmm. It's your temple. What do you want in the temple? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So the point is then, if it's there, if the temple is dynamic, it also it attracts. Life generates life. Does that make sense? But it's not the problem. You go to other places, it's dynamic.
Yeah.
So the problem is not understanding what it is that you're dealing with. You know what I'm saying? Like that. I mean, because in other words, there are duties. Brahmachari ashram means there are duties. Grihastha ashram means there are duties. You know, and if someone can't follow duties and all that, they shouldn't be in the ashram. But if they're devotees and people, you know, feel that they want to take care of them, then create an environment for them where they'll be able to be taken care of. Because the point is they couldn't care less if they're crashing in the temple or crashing somewhere else, as long as they have a place to crash and something to eat. You know what I'm saying? That's the bottom line. It's not like, no, they have to be in the temple. Does that make sense? Like that. So then it's a matter of figuring out something. Right? Then you have community. Right? Temple should be for those who are committed to full-time service. Right? Does that make sense? It means those who are living in the temple. Those who manage this and that, that's another question. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to be living in the temple to be an administrator. You know what I'm saying? That's a different thing. But those who are living in the temple like that, they should be the ones that are full-time, you know, absorbed. You know? Is that okay? Yeah, okay. I think we'll end here because we're over time anyway. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainatai Govinda Premanandi.
Bhakti Vidya Puri Swami ki.
Yeah.